Hi, I'm Libby.
And I'm Riley, and welcome to On the Come Up. As young professionals ourselves, we're constantly striving to connect and uplift young people in the Toledo community. Our podcast is featuring young entrepreneurs and professionals in the area from all different industries and walks of life who are making an impact in Toledo.
We're excited to have our guests discuss their background, their education and training, and give any advice for other young professionals like us. We're also going to take a look at varying pop culture trends among Gen Zers like ourselves and discuss or debunk them, maybe even a little Roman Empire. You know what I've been thinking about?
What, girl?
Theater. Specifically musical theater.
Musical theater. Where are my theater kids at? Unite.
I was gonna say, you're definitely a theater kid.
Yes.
And I love that for you.
I am a born and raised theater kid. My mother taught me well. She instilled that love in theater in me from a young age. And honestly, I know there are a lot of parts about it that are cringy, but there are also a lot of parts about it that are really helpful in my life.
I can agree. I think I'm, how would you say, like a post-theater kid? Like, yeah. I used to be a theater kid.
Theater kid adjacent.
Yeah.
I would see that. No, but I think it's really interesting. You know, you and I, with our music backgrounds and our theater backgrounds, talk a lot about how music has impacted us professionally.
Definitely.
And, you know, for both of us, like cold calling people in journalism or interviewing people, I don't think I would have the nerve to do it without that. And so I think music educators are so important to life skills.
Absolutely.
Well, we're so lucky today that our guest has taken time out of his very busy schedule to join us in the studio. So hi, Aaron. Thank you for
Hello.
Joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Aaron Rose, you guys, is just an everyman. He is doing all of the things. And because Libby and I are both big music people, we're excited to talk to him today about his career in music education and also his path in music in general, because he does the most. He's doing all types of music stuff all around the city. So it's really exciting to have his perspective. And he's not a born and raised Toledoan. So Uh-oh. That is a little, you know, no,
I'm
we won't
either,
put you on trial
so.
For that. But
yeah. So it's good to have someone that's not from here to kind of go off of.
Yeah. Libby has a new buddy.
Yeah. And I know you do know Riley personally, but I don't. So kind of fill me in, take it back where you grew up.
Yeah. So I'm originally from Lakewood, Ohio, which is right outside of Cleveland, directly west. I was basically there from age 3 onwards, so that's kind of very much where I call home. It was a fantastic place to grow up. It was a really great district to grow up for the arts specifically. Music was huge in my kind of middle school and high school career, and so it was always this kind of side thing, right? I never really considered it as a career until later on. I just happened to be lucky enough to grow up in a district that valued music very heavily. And I definitely didn't understand kind of how rare that could be until afterwards. I kind of, yeah, grew up very involved in all sorts of random music around the Cleveland area.
Yeah, tell us a little bit about that involvement early on.
Yeah, so basically from elementary school onwards, I was part of the Lincoln Lion Singers.
Yes,
which was the elementary school choir, right?
Nice.
Everything from that on, you know, it was just music was a part of my life just kind of without even thinking, right? I took piano lessons. I sang in the church choirs. I did all these random things. Then once we got into, you know, middle school and kind of more formalized music, if you will, I started playing clarinet, which, you know, lasted
nice.
3 whole years. And then shifted in high school to choir because I didn't have to do the practice forms and it was going to be an easy A.
So true.
And so all of a sudden I started singing in choir and immediately fell in love with it. And so then kind of moving forward with that, I did every choir thing at the high school I could get my hands on. I did the kind of curricular choirs. I did the chamber choir, which was the kind of auditioned before school choir. And then I sang as a member of Viva La Four, which was the barbershop quartet at the high school.
Nice.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was kind of just one of those things where it was like, oh, yeah, wait, singing is awesome. I love this. This is so great. And it very much served as an escape from the rest of high school for me. And then my senior year, actually, I kind of opened a whole nother door when I auditioned for the musical, and we were doing Beauty and the Beast, and I got the part of the Beast, and all of a sudden The theater door was opened, and I was like, oh, this also is incredible.
Ugh, right? Boys this is a, in theater this getting the lead other... on their first try.
Okay, you know what? It's, yeah, okay, that's fair.
I was going to say, you have to give me that
one
a little.
100%. You know, it's definitely much easier. So that, again, kind of opened just this whole other world that I didn't even know existed, and very much found a new community of people with whom I really, really connected, because that was, for me, one of the places where I felt most comfortable, most myself, that I had found throughout all of high school. But weirdly enough, again, it never kind of struck me as a career choice. I was still very centered on going into sports broadcasting. That's what I was going to do with my life, darn it.
As you can hear, he has that nice broadcasting voice.
Oh, no. Okay. So I was going to go into sports broadcasting. That was what I had basically had my heart set on since I was, you know, three, watching the Browns lose a lot, and just getting really, really into the sports world and really falling in love with that, right? And the whole kind of scene surrounding sports and sports broadcasting. And so I did a year at Ohio State. For sports broadcasting, had a great time, but realized that that wasn't what I really wanted to do with the rest of my life, sure. Which in a way was kind of earth-shattering, right? When you kind of are like, oh, this is what I'm going to do. This is who I'm going to be. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, wait, I don't enjoy this as much as I thought I did, right?
Right.
It is definitely kind of a world-bending experience. And so I kind of took a step back and looked around at what had I been enjoying throughout my life? What had been huge parts of my life? And again, without even realizing it, music had been such an integral part of my growing up, of my development, of my life up until that point. And I was like, all right, you know, my brother was actually also, you know, he was far more set on music education. He knew where his heart was. And I kind of then took the hint from him and was like, oh, this actually, yeah, this would be a really, I think, impactful way for me to kind of spend my life, and also just very much fulfilling for myself as well, because, you know, I love the performance aspect just as much as I love the teaching aspect.
For sure.
So yeah, that's how we're now here.
Well, and I think it's interesting, we've talked about this a lot with other guests too, is that pressure to be so successful at such a young age. And I think, you know, when you start in school and you have your mind set on something, it can be really hard to make that transition because you feel like you're losing time, so to speak. And I think that that's, first of all, really brave for you to then take a look at what you really wanted to do and move into that instead of sticking with something just because you had already had experience in it. But also, like you were talking about that impact, I'm really curious for you to talk a little bit about your transition from OSU to then BGSU for music education, and talking a little bit about what you're using that degree for and the impact you're making in the community here.
Yeah, so it really kind of came down to, again, when I was taking that step back and looking at the people who had influenced me most and had the biggest impact on me, oftentimes, you know, kind of 9 out of 10 of them were involved in the arts in some way, right? I had 2 choir teachers in high school. Both of them were on that list, right? The drama director from high school was on that list. A person who I had worked in with an outside choir was on that. It's just kind of that. And I was looking at that and going, oh, shoot, these are the people who really, really had the biggest impact on me. And okay, maybe I can turn that around and have that same similar impact on other people. And so in going to BG, I was able to actually kind of develop the skills that you don't have quite as much when you are an 18-year-old kind of trying to be like, ah, yes, this is exactly what I want to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which in and of itself is already tough because, you know, some people are struggling to even find out what they want to eat for dinner. And they're like, yeah, what do you want to do with your life? And they're like, ah.
Right, yeah.
But so just having that kind of backbone and that support system of people to reach out to and message and say, hey, why did you go into this in the first place? What was it about this that inspired you? And have them kind of give me some feedback, inspired me in my own way, right? And so having that kind of kickstart after OSU and then heading to BGSU with music education was very much that kind of idea of, okay, I have this support system. I have these people who believe that I can do this, right? That's really, and just even having that was already so comforting, right? Because having people who believe that you can make an impact on other people is a really big gift. And then so I had an incredible experience at BGSU and left there feeling very much, you know, ready to take on the world. And so since then, you know, I've taught public education, high school choir. And then I moved into, as I am now kind of hoping to shift back towards a master's degree, I have kind of taken a step away from that, and I'm directing Singing Blue at St. Francis High School in the area.
Woo.
I am doing a lot of composing and arranging for my own kind of self stuff and for other groups in the area. I am teaching voice lessons and keyboard lessons at School of Rock in Perrysburg. I am doing a lot with, all sorts of community theater things now, both kind of in performing and directing aspects. It has been a very much kind of hodgepodge mess of things, right? But it's been absolutely incredible, just in the fact that it has really kind of given me such a fulfilling experience having all of these different musical capacities from all sorts of different angles, right? From getting to work with, high schoolers to one of the shows I'm working on right now is Seussical. So, really little kids as well as adults. And then I'm going to be in actually a production of School of Rock at the Croswell Opera House in the summer playing Dewey Finn. And so to have a whole different style of working with those artists is just an incredible environment to be in, right?
Yeah.
Where you're really getting to experience a different style of music in almost every single place you go and role that you have.
For sure.
That's awesome.
Channeling his inner Jack Black, working with the little kids.
There you go.
And I have to share a quick heartwarming story. I live in the Levis Commons area, and I saw Aaron one day teaching at School of Rock. Passing by the window, there's Aaron just leading around a group of kids in this Aww. Fun exercise, like a little cutie pie Pied Piper. And it was so adorable. And even I'm working on Seussical with Aaron as well. And even seeing how those kids just flock to him and are so eager to learn. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have never been in a music rehearsal with children where I have seen them actually excited to learn the music than when I'm seeing Aaron teach these songs for Seussical. It's truly really astonishing. It's awesome.
That's a gift too, to be able to take that love of music and pass it on to the younger generation.
Plus, I will say though, Libby and I both did grow up with a music background as well. So I obviously did, as you know, choir and musical theater and stuff like that. And then Libby at her school.
I did do a little bit of theater. And then in high school, I was really concentrated in band. My thing was the oboe. I wanted to.
That's impressive.
Thanks. True. I wanted to get as good as possible, but they're really expensive, so it's kind of hard to continue that after high school if you don't own one personally. But I also dabbled in the flute and the English horn.
My
did a little
gosh.
Bit of that.
Okay.
So
yeah. Libby is very, very sneaky talented in the music area too.
Sneaky talented, yes.
But yeah, like you were saying, there is some economic disparity, I think, too, in the music world, especially if you want to be successful. We've talked about with previous guests the disparity in pay for teachers and how it can be really difficult to find sustaining jobs with that. So I think it is really special that you are taking the time in many different avenues to give the kids this gift, even though maybe some kids might not be able to afford it in certain ways. Even like with your community theater endeavors, some of those kids might not have the funds to go to School of Rock or go to another paid place like that, but they might have the funds to do a free show with community theater
right.
and have the resources to get to the rehearsals and interact with you in that way. So there is such an embedded educational component within that too. And I would love if you could talk a little bit too about more of your theater involvement and kind of your love of theater and how that permeates the Toledo community.
Definitely. I am very much in the camp of people who takes on way too much, and I'm okay with that. So let's see here. In the past year or so, I was in the ensemble for 3B's production of Chicago. Then I played Nick Bottom for their production of Something Rotten, which was a blast. That was an absolute dream role.
Aaron had to learn to tap dance for that role, which was so exciting.
And we'll call that tap dancing. Yeah.
No, it was something.
We will call what happened on stage tap dancing, and nobody can take that away from me.
So true.
And then actually going into the spring, I accepted the music directing position for Seussical with, obviously, Riley's choreographer.
Woohoo!
And then that's with Waterville Play Shop, and then I'm music directing Annie Get Your Gun with Bedford Players. And then starting, about in mid-May will be Croswell Opera House School of Rock, for which, I'm playing Dewey Finn. So
right,
it's
awesome.
It's kind of this, apparently, obviously, as you can tell, I can't really get enough of it, right? Just because I think it's an absolutely magical thing, specifically right. community theater, right? Because I think, obviously, all sorts of theater is incredible. I was able to go see Hadestown when it came through at the Stranahan, and that was mesmerizing, right? Mm-hmm. That was incredibly, incredibly well done. But at the same time, I think some of that magic translates into community theater, right? Where you don't at all have to be somebody who's been in a million shows to do this, right? And I think that's such the cool part about it is you can be somebody who's never even been in a show ever and be like, you know what? That looks like a cool environment to be in. That looks like a cool community of people to take part in an act of art with, right? I want to be a part of that. And there are so many avenues that are open to that. And that's one of the reasons that I love community theater so much and try to get involved with it as much as I can, because I think it's a lot of times such a escape for a lot of people, right? Mm-hmm, you literally are becoming another person.
Right.
You are immersing yourself in this world, and it is such a brilliant way to kind of just escape oftentimes what can be a stressful and frustrating world.
I'm curious if you have a favorite show that you've worked on.
That's a really tough one.
And let me make it harder. A dream show, too, that you would love to work on but haven't yet.
The dream show that I got to work on was definitely, I think, Something Rotten. That had been, I was able to see that in New York when it first started its Broadway run and instantly fell in love with it. And that had been a dream show ever since. And so that was really, really cool. I had the opportunity to work on a production of Pippin in college. I would love to actually be able to redo that experience, right? And now knowing what I know now, having the experience I have now, so on and so forth, all of that good stuff. I would love to do a production of Pippin again somewhere in some capacity, be that directing or performing. I think that show is spectacular. It has some of my favorite musical theater music of all time. So that's what I'm going to go with for that.
That's funny. I love that. Was actually our musical my senior year of high school.
Really?
So I played in the pit for that. But definitely would like to redo it. I was not the best performance.
Well, and that's, I think that show specifically has so many different ways you can take it, right? Because its first Broadway run was a whole different idea of it than when it had its kind of reprise on Broadway. And I love the way it's developed and the way it's grown. And I think that the evolution of the show has just been brilliant. And I would love to kind of, you know, see somebody else's take on it and take part in that as well.
And I want to come back to, you talked a little bit about it earlier, about your arranging. So you, for those who don't know, Aaron does a lot of arranging for different schools or community organizations, and even just for fun, which I think is a really unique skill. I mean, it is not easy to arrange music. So I'd love if you could talk a little bit about your process with that. And then also if you have any musical inspiration that you kind of turn to when looking to arrange.
So it fully depends on the arrangement, or I guess, you know, also the composition, depending on what's being asked for. I pull a lot of inspiration from everywhere, from, you know, Eric Whitaker for like actual full-on choral music.
I love Eric Whitaker.
Right? To Jacob Collier is by far my favorite like musical artist. And so just everything in between, right? But I think the two of them specifically, you know, have a lot of influence on what I, you know, create and put out to the world. In terms of a process, right, it really kind of kickstarted in college. I started arranging for the a cappella groups that I was in, and that's kind of how I got into the arranging scene, was college a cappella. From there, it kind of grew into, oh, I can also actually do this for instruments and for, you know, more serious choral music and so on and so forth. And so now it's probably about 50-50 original compositions and arrangements, right? Arrangements are great, obviously, because you know, in a way, they're easier. You have a building block, you have a foundation. But at the same time, there's definitely more hoops to jump through because there's a whole lot more, you know, legal work that goes into making sure you have the rights and everything to actually fully arrange a piece and to have a group perform that and so on and so forth. I had a piece that I arranged for Volare down at BGSU. It was an arrangement of a song by a group called the Tune Yards called Hold Yourself. That was an absolute blast. I have arranged a piece for them as well a few years ago by a group called San Fermin. That was a piece that the director really liked and really wanted to kind of fit in and use as a transition piece. And so she reached out to San Fermin and was like, hey, would you mind if we arrange? And they actually responded to her and were like, yeah, just send us the video. We like it. It's really cool. That was such a cool experience, right? Because I think a lot of times bands and artists in general are really collaborative. And I think a lot of times there's this kind of stigma of like, I want my money for all of the work I've done, right? Which at the same time definitely makes sense, especially with streaming services. Sadly, the bands don't make anywhere near as much money as they should from those. But at the same time, you know, I think deep down most of us are artists and we want to have that collaborative aspect to our music, right? And
absolutely.
So that was kind of the experience that I had with San Fermin was, you know, the group reached back out and was like, yeah, here's, and the one of the members of the group actually sent me a Sibelius file that he had done for something else and was like, here's this, like, if this helps at all, right? And so it was this really cool kind of back and forth collaborative process to create what was the final product. And it is definitely one of my favorite avenues of music is the actual creation of it, whether that be, you know, original compositions or arrangements. I just think it's such an incredible way to produce music.
For sure.
Yeah, I love that.
It's so interesting to hear all the different ways that you can connect with people through music, be mm-hmm. it, you know, the musical theater or just straight music or composing, anything like that. I find that really fascinating.
No, I agree. And it definitely just comes back to that community aspect that we were kind of talking about. When everyone has that love for music, it makes it so easy to share and create. And
and I think talking about the other thing I'm interested to hear from you about is how music can kind of be a personal development tool as well. You know, I think a lot of people who grow up doing music and theater have some life skills that I think maybe other people might not. And so from your standpoint, you know, you've been on both sides of it, on the learning side and the education side. So talk to me a little bit about how it feels to you as a personal development tool.
Wow. So, I mean, even just, and it affects all of the aspects we've been talking about, right? As a performer, as a director, as an arranger, right? You develop very much in all of these different aspects, right? If I went back and looked at one of my first arrangements for a college a cappella group now, I would laugh at myself, right? if I went back and looked at kind of some of the choices I made as a director, right, in the beginning, I would laugh at myself, right? Because it really, I think, as you go in any of the branches, right, you learn, you'll make mistakes and you'll learn from those mistakes. And within that, you know, if you're looking at as a performer, right, well, we can use tap dancing as an example, darn it. I would not have called myself a tap dancer before. But it actually very much taught me how to, I was never really an incremental learner before, right? Completely chunking things up into very tiny pieces and running those over and over. And that's how I had to learn how to tap dance, right?
Right.
Was, okay, I need to take literally like 4 seconds at a time and run these moves over and over and over and over and over and until they just become almost muscle memory,
right?
Right? And then go from there. And then it's the next 4 seconds and the next four. And so, you know, it takes multiple weeks to build out even 30 seconds to a minute of a tap dance. And that was something that I had never had to really kind of process in that way before. That was not really how I, you know, broke down information, but it was a new skill that I now have and that I found myself actually using in various different aspects, be that, you know, directing. If I'm teaching a piece of music and, you know, there's this four measure part that we just aren't getting, we go measure by measure. Okay, sing this measure. Okay, let's sing the second measure. Okay, let's put those first two together, right? Really, really kind of breaking down and doing incremental learning on, you know, just those four measures. And
right.
So it can really be used now across any of the different roles I take. And so, you know, there've been multiple of those examples where it's, oh, this is a skill that I had not really had in my repertoire before, right? But now I have in my little Batman tool belt of of pedagogy, and I can use whenever, you know, something else isn't working and I'm like, oh, let's try this, right?
Right.
That I never really would have thought of before.
Yeah, and I'm sure, Libby, you can attest to this too, but I think also the way that it impacts your personal development in terms of how you interact with other people, your interpersonal relationships, you know, your comfortability speaking to a large group of people
100%.
Or, you know, connecting with different people, be it coworkers or friends or even your family. I think music and theater can really teach you some crucial life skills.
I think music is one of the most vulnerable things you can do.
Yeah.
Right. Especially singing. Right. For our lovely instrumentalist at the table. Right. When you squeak on an oboe, you can be like, ooh, oboe did something weird. Right. If your voice cracks, that's kind of just you. And you're
what
have I done? Right. And you have nobody to blame but your own self. And so it's such a vulnerable thing to just put yourself out there like that in any regard, in theater, in choir, in any sort of music making. Right. In any sort of art because a lot of art is personal, like even down to actual, you know, visual art is a lot of personal things that are going on the page or that are being sung or that are being played. And so I think it's a really, really vulnerable thing to do. And so to really kind of teach yourself to put yourself out there in that way. And then when you do that with a community of people like you're talking about, it really teaches you how to build that community of people around you, right? How to interact with people in a way that I don't think we interact with people much today, right? outside of things where we are fully comfortable being our full selves, being vulnerable with the people we're doing it with, right? I think making art with people in that way is a really, really cool thing that we don't get to experience much outside of it.
At the very least, gets you out from behind your screen.
There you go.
And the way people talk about left and right brain, I feel like it does combine that of like the creativity aspect and the mathematics of like, oh, this many counts, this many, this and that, which is just interesting. I think it helps your whole brain feel alive in that sense.
It's a uniting aspect on all fronts for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I know we're to the part you're the most excited about, Aaron. We're going to kick it over to our favorite segment on the podcast, your Roman Empire. Libby, give our listeners a quick little refresher if they don't know.
Okay, so it started with asking men how often they think about the Roman Empire. It was way more than anyone could have ever imagined. And now it's kind of coined as a term to just mean anything you can't get out of your brain. We've been loving knowing our guests.
So true. And even thinking of our own, too, has been really interesting because I feel like we chat about them a lot, but then we get to recording and we're like, oh, wait, which one should we choose?
No.
So we'll kick it over to you first, Aaron. Tell us your Roman Empire today.
All right. So today, my Roman Empire is two specific scenes from movies. First of all, Princess Bride.
Okay.
The scene in which he is rolling down the hill. She has pushed him down the hill, but he is rolling down the hill. Wesley is rolling down the hill going, as you wish. And then she goes, oh, Wesley, and throws herself down the hill. And so they're just both careening down the hill. That one, for some reason, always sticks in my head. And then the second would be from the Jim Carrey Grinch.
Yes.
In which Christine Baranski is playing Martha May Huvier and has the best line of the entire movie, which is, Betty, hi. And it's just for some reason that line from that movie is full of gold, right? Every single line that Jim Carrey has in his little like kind of, you know, self-inflicted session of as the Grinch, right?
So jazzercise,
right? That whole thing, exactly. Like
that's it. I'm not going.
He has so many great lines, and for some reason, the line that best sticks with me is Betty, hi.
I have to say, I think anything Christine Baranski does is going to be an automatic eat.
Like, correct.
She always eats.
Yes, that is fair.
That's all you can say about it. And Buttercup, going back to The Princess Bride, is my favorite drama queen to the max. Because why did she have to throw herself down the hill? She could have just glided. She could have just, you know, gently walked. But no, she threw herself after her love.
Another day, another drama.
No,
that's why.
No, literally. And it's that always. All right, Libby.
Okay. I have been watching Good Trouble. I love that show. It's the spinoff from The Fosters. Unlike other spinoffs, I think it's done so well. And I think I have the series finale is all I have left to watch. And I read some comments on Instagram under a post. They were promoting it. And they were like, there's so many loose ends. This is an awful finale. Why? It can't be over. So now I'm like, do I even watch it?
Yeah, that's the worst.
And that's fine.
That's actually what I did with How I Met Your Mother. I was watching until the end, and then I heard so many bad things about
stopped.
The way they ended that I was like, I'm going to create my own ending in my head.
It's so hard, though. I have to give the writers who do stick the landing much credit.
100%.
Because I cannot even, off the top of my head in this conversation, think of a series finale that I was completely great with.
Schitt's Creek.
Okay, so true. Actually, that's a great answer. Schitt's Creek did have a good finale. But yeah, it's very hard to stick the landing on a show. So I am very, very much with you. And I would like to share. I picked this one specially for our musical guest today.
Uh-oh.
I want to talk about Renee Rapp. And specifically, I want to talk about Renee Rapp's live vocals.
Oh.
Because, oh my Lanta, that woman can sing. Because we know, I mean, we knew she could sing, right? Like, obviously, if for those who just are hearing about her from the Mean Girls movie, which, I mean, glad that you're on the train, but like, do your homework. Find out about Renee Rapp. Dive deeper. Because because Renee Rapp is a Jimmy Award winner. And for those who don't know, to break it down, that's like the, you know, little Broadway baby award that you get and kickstart your Broadway career. And it's always so exciting. And Renee Rapp is trained in musical theater, which this is another separate Roman Empire, but feeds into this. I think people who are classically trained or trained in musical theater singing automatically have better live vocals than half of the pop stars today.
That makes sense.
Even like Ariana Grande is a great example of that. Classically trained, musical theater trained. She started on Broadway. That, to me, is a great example. But Renee Rapp, specifically the video of her singing Snow Angels live, because woof. I mean, one, she's Gorgina, and I love looking at her beautiful face. But two, man, her voice, just the way she has such excellent control, how she can always, you know, elevate whatever she made in her studio recording to be so much better and richer and deeper in her live performances. I am gagged, to say the least.
A rare talent.
I know, right?
We love Renee Rapp. Honestly.
And she ate in the Mean Girls movie, so.
Very true.
I'll say that much, too.
There you go.
But yeah. So anyway,
guess our Regina.
guess our Regina. Actually, it's Aaron, you guys. That's the plot twist. Aaron's our Regina.
Good Lord.
On the Voices Around Us Mean Girls production.
I am so honored. Thank you.
Well, Aaron, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yes,
we were so happy to chat with you.
Thank you for having me.
We'd like to give a big thank you to Aaron Rose, our guest on today's show. We're your hosts and producers, Libby and Riley. Our executive producer is Chris Pfeiffer.
If you have any questions, comments, or just want to listen again, go to wgte.org/comeup or wherever you stream your podcast.
Bye, besties!
Bye, besties.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.